Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, March 29th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon-Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We help people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives. And secondarily, because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, please do so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you do that, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. If for whatever reason you are not able or you do not desire to call in live, you can ask a question, give an answer or a testimonial through an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you through an email, we will address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so that you can listen back to the archives for the feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody does that because it just makes it so much easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be a service, and that's just a whole heck of a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. And we are continually adjusting our efforts. We are doing things like rereading The Way of Mastery because it was requested. And we got into the Course in Miracles the year before last. And then last year we did, the year before last, I guess it was The Way of Mastery. And the year before that, we read the Course in Miracles workbook lessons before each day's show. And then last year we did a whole series of readings from My Big Toe or My Big Theory of Everything, that book, and Christian Sundberg's book, A Walk in the Physical, and Diedrich Wolzak's book, Choose Again. All of these, to my eye and ear, have very compatible, very similar messages. And as Dr. Michael Rice points out in his seminal work, the more different ways we can come at a complex issue or a new topic to us, which would seem complex at first glance, the more different ways we can get to look at that, the quicker we will understand it and the deeper will our understanding be. So that's why we do this and present it from different teachers' perspectives, and that's how we are hoping to be of service in the primary work, other than just doing worksheets and talking about the reality management worksheet process and how it is powerfully effective in different situations. When I mention that, I should probably mention that it's come up a few times recently. I don't promote it or publicize it directly because the website, the mindshiftersacademy.org, was created to try and help funnel more people to the whyagain.org website, working under the premise that the more different websites point toward a specific website, the higher that website will go in the rankings. And so about 5 or 6 years ago now, I created the mindshiftersacademy.org website, and it basically just has the same kind of material that Michael and Jeannie have on the whyagain.org website. And I have some of the highlight audio files there. I have what I call the mental short version of the reality management worksheet, which is it's the process I use in my private practice to introduce people to the worksheet process, because it is a very simplified approach, and because I'm working with people one-on-one so I can answer their questions and explain it in more detail. The reason Michael has the worksheet that he does, that is the 7-step worksheet, is because when that worksheet was created, Michael and Jeannie would be traveling around the country, and they would only be in one location for at most about a week. And they would do workshops on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and all day Saturday, and then they would leave, and they'd be in another town for the next week. And so Michael had the feeling that he needed to put everything he knows into the worksheet, because he may never have contact with those people again. And the other thing that really contributed to the worksheet being all fine print and packed together on one page was that they were traveling around the country in a van. And this was happening before there was the internet and people had ready access to print things off, so they had to carry with them all of the reams of paper that would have the worksheets on them, or when they got to a town, they'd need to stop and make copies. So all these factors contributed to the worksheet being only one page and being packed to the gills with words and new concepts for people to grasp. And so I don't have that need in my private practice. I have more ongoing connection with people, and I can point them now to the resources of the internet show for the past 13 plus years, 1 hour a day, 5 days a week for the first 8 years, and 2 hours a day, 5 days a week for the last five. So in short order here, we will finish, or we'll hit the five-year anniversary of the second hour of the work, the Mind Shifters radio show. And lots of those files are available on both the YGN.org and the archives there, and on the MindShiftersAcademy.org on either the Best of audio file page or the audio files page or the Way of Mastery with Commentary page, etc. And the short version of the reality, the mental short version of the Reality Management Worksheet is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website on the page titled Educational Material. So, please feel free to take advantage of that, one of the many free resources that Michael and Jeannie make available, and let us know when you do that if you have comments or questions that we can support you in answering. Again, primary purpose that we have for being here, our intention is to be a service, and the primary way we hope to be a service is to help people get access to and improve their ability to get benefit from this body of work and these tools. So again, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 on your phone, we can have a conversation. We are available to either step people through the worksheet process and or answer questions about anything that's gone on this internet show for the past 13 years. And in general, you know, one of the things that we've done over the years, because we've had so many different teachers that we've introduced into this work, is some of the people in the support groups have labeled this work the International Spiritual Translator work. Because if you've got a body of work that is practical and spiritual and seems to work for you or seems to work for somebody else, there are really good chances that that work is highly compatible with this work, even if the jargon or the terminology or the format seems very different. And so we're also available to attempt to discuss or answer questions about any other spiritual work that you might have been doing that you are engaged in now or that you've moved away from to explore this work. And so what I find personally most beneficial in that process is to look for the similarities. Lots and lots of people are really big on highlighting all the differences. My work is better than your work because of this, that, and the other, or my guru is enlightened more than your guru because of this and that. And I never found value in that. I have found value in highlighting the similarities and in finding a way to highlight those similarities to the benefit of anybody who's listening or trying to apply them in their lives. So again, I quote this fairly often. Guy Finley, one of my favorite teachers, says there is nothing more practical than true spirituality, because the true spirituality is simply describing how things actually work. It's what Dr. Michael Rice might refer to as natural law or the fundamental laws, because unlike the ordinances that men and women pass as rules that, you know, they punish if you violate them, natural law is never violated. It just functions. And if you don't pay attention to it or you try and pretend it doesn't work the way it works, you have to deal with the consequences. And sometimes those are quite painful. And one of the things I started saying years ago was, anything that works is just like everything else that works. So when you're trying to take a look at your process and somebody comes along and says, that's wrong, that's bad, that's not, you know, true, if it's working for you, please just keep doing what's working for you. I in my private practice and we on this internet show, as long as I've been associated with it, we're advocating for people to tune inside themselves to find what works for them. I've talked for years about how people have come and gone through this work and the support groups and the internet show. And sometimes they come and they say, well, it's interesting, but it's not really for me, and they don't stick around very long. And sometimes they come and they stick around a good long while, and then they just disappear. And sometimes they come and they stick around and they get good stuff for themselves, and they have a change in their life circumstance, and they actually say, hey, thanks for all of this. I'm still using it. It's great, but in my life right now, it doesn't really work for me to, you know, attend the support group or be on the internet show. So thanks for all you're doing, and maybe we'll see you again later. For me, and people from time to time, it's not as frequent as it used to be, but from time to time people ask me, why do you do all of this? Why do you donate so much time to the support groups two nights a week and the internet show 1 hour a day, 5 days a week? And I say, well, the primary reason is because of the benefit I get from it, because the more I teach these tools, the better I get at using them for myself and the better my life gets. The next level of why I do this is because of the people I get to interact with, because of the tremendous synchronicity, the energy resonating, the benefit of, you know, my preference to be around people who are actually doing their own work and working to take as close to 100% responsibility as they can manage for whatever they're experiencing in their life in response to the flow of life. And I count that as just something to have gratitude or appreciation for. I know, I think it was probably the day before yesterday, Michael Rice was on the air with Susan Bingaman talking about he's got a new shift, and he's going to start using the word gratitude differently and appreciation differently. And what I just want to say to people is another deep teaching that doesn't just come from Dr. Michael Rice, it's known through the centuries, is that words only have the meaning that people give them. All words are made up. And people make up words in an attempt to try and communicate to other people and with other people. And so there is no such thing as this word means this, because the meaning of words changes over time. The meaning of words can be, you know, very different from culture to culture. It can be different over time in the same culture. You know, one of the people at Dr. Michael Rice has talked about and had on the show before is an older gentleman who was, I think he might be a priest in the Eastern Orthodox Church. But anyway, he was talking about some of these powerful and dramatic changes in the way words are used and their meaning in our culture in just a 50-year time period. And the example he used was, he was in his attic a number of years ago, and he found some letters that his mother had written him when he was in college. And just 50 years in the same culture, just 50 years had passed, and the words his mother was using in her letter to him had changed their meanings dramatically. One example that he gave was that one letter from his mother said, she's going out Friday night with her gay friends. And at the time she wrote that, it just meant the people that she enjoys partying with, people who are fun. They like to dance and sing and listen to music. Well, when he was sharing that letter, the word gay in our culture has now taken on the meaning of referring to somebody who has a specific sexual preference. And that's just within one culture and just in a 50-year time span. So imagine how the meaning of words has changed. Across cultures, across hundreds of years, and now in the case of we're trying to look at the Bible and translations of the Bible or interpretations of the Bible from 2,000 years ago, so if someone like Dr. Michael Rice says, oh, now I don't really, you know, I think this gratitude thing isn't all it's cracked up to be, and I think appreciation's a better way to end. So then he's defining appreciation a certain way. If it works for you to start thinking and talking that way, great. But to say, oh, that's the way it really is an error in your thought process, and it's giving more of a substance and a stability to something that just changes like the wind changes. The meaning of words is what you give it. As Michael Rice likes to talk about it, the meaning of a word is only contained in the mind of the person who hears and interprets that word. The word itself doesn't have any meaning. So I have this great gratitude for, appreciation for, whichever word you want to use, the fact that I got lucky in the lottery of life, the idea of that the two magnificent people who were my parents just happened to be a really good match for the mix of personality traits and emotional sensitivities that I was born with. And then beyond that, beyond what words can say, I was really, really lucky with the friends that I stumbled across and had the abundant pleasure of having in my life. And that gets extended when I participate in the support groups and the internet show. And that's why I do. That's the second reason for why I do what I do. It's the synergistic amplification of the good stuff, the good energy of life. And I occasionally run across people that come to the support group or they're on the internet show and they just keep doing their work and they just keep showing up and it just keeps it's like a positive feedback loop. Area code 610. Is this Susan?
Hi, Dr. Tim. This is kind of a detour from what you've been talking about. You mentioned the book, The Brain That Changes Itself, and the woman, I sent you a video this morning about changing the brain.
DNRS.
Yeah. And I feel as if I'm doing a kind of Hail Mary for my son by being so interested in this, because when the patient, Molly Hopper, Annie Hopper is the author and originator of this particular method. She told about her own life and how terribly physically and mentally sick she had gotten with no treatment seemingly effective. And she found her way to healing. She's extremely brave and has a wonderful will, and she just got better and realized what she was doing to get herself better, and then realized it was information that other people could use. One thing she said in there that struck me so much, because I have a grandson who is seeing a therapist for OCD, and he talks to me about how he feels he has something wrong with his brain. He just goes into these compulsive reasoning or non-reasoning processes and conclusions he draws that he knows are crazy, but they're so painful and so compelling that he'll get caught in it, like getting caught in an undertow. And for a while, he just has to ride it out and not involve too many other people, especially it's relational OCD with him. So if he has it's his father, horribly enough, his father who he's focusing on, and it's been great since he went off to college because the focus has been diluted by distance and new friends and new experiences. But this woman said OCD is really not a thought disorder. It's a limbic system malfunction, brain problem. And I don't even know enough to say what I'm saying almost, because I just listened to this and I thought, I need this for my son, who is just in a very bad way. Interestingly enough, yesterday, a stray dog that he and his wife had found in Aruba, their whole family went to Aruba a few weeks ago, and Aruba has this stray dog refurbishment program where they pick them up, they get them all healthy, they feed them, and they find families for them. Because a lot of people visit Aruba and they fall in love with these lovely animals that are running free over the island, and they ship them up to wherever they need to go, and they're adopted. And my son's own dog died several months ago, and they were thinking about getting another dog. Finally, they did. And yesterday was the day that we were going to drive to Kennedy Airport. And here's my son taking a leave of absence from work, saying he just cannot, he's not a safe doctor. He cannot focus enough to take care of his patients. Desperately depressed, almost immobile. He found this trip really exciting and fun. We were going to get the dog. So we drove up to get the dog. Great experience of these dogs being brought out in crates on pallets in a huge cargo area of the airport. And we took videotapes, and it was very exciting. And the poor dog was shaking like a leaf, and I sat in the back seat with her all the way home and just held her and made sure she calmed down, and she finally did. She's a lovely beast. On the other hand, I'm noting that my son is feeling quite well, not beating himself up for disappearing on his partners at the hospital, adding to their workload by just suddenly not being able to go to work. Guilt up the kazoo. All these crippling feelings seem to have lessened because he had this project of getting the dog. Now he's home, and I was hoping maybe the experience of doing the dog would have lifted him out of that depression he's been in, but today he's just a mess again, and I want to send him this video, but here I am, fix it mom, figuring it out mom. I'm not sending it to him yet. I told him about it, and he said, I can't listen to anything. I can't even focus on reading, but if you listen to this video, Annie, the founder of this method, sounds just like my son. Only she had a lot of physical illnesses, and my son does too. He says he feels sick to his stomach, he's dizzy, he's got brain fog. And I say, this is all part of that, and I'm trying to encourage him. And, of course, I want to hand him cures across the board. So you're talking about finding something that works for you. I have found stuff that works for me, and it has made a huge difference in my life. No more anxiety, even in this situation. Watching my son suffer, Michael would say, I shouldn't say I'm not anxious, but that means I'm saying the opposite. But anxiety is not an issue here. It's just the wish to have him well and try to be there and accompany him. I feel as if I've become one of those Eastern prayer wheels or something. I'm asking for help. I'm picturing help coming, and I'm thinking my finding this video this morning might be a sign. But on the other hand, so you're talking about finding tools. I'm trying to find tools for my offspring and my offspring's offspring, and I'm way out of my bailiwick and probably not minding my own business enough. I don't know why what I expect you to say with all that, but there are great tools out there, all kinds, and they will. I hope these tools, Annie, for instance, I hope what she offers will speak to my son the way the wake-up sheets and the mind shifter sheet, targeted journaling, all that stuff hasn't helped him. So I'll stop talking there if you want to hitch in anywhere.
Well, the thing that keeps coming to me is, and we've talked about this in the past, is the stellate ganglion block,
I don't recognize that.
Well, you can look it up. In the Chicago area, there's a Dr. Eugene Lipov, L-I-P-O-V, who does this. And we've talked about it before on the internet show because I've been on panels with him and tried to help him explain in the early going his accent was so intense that some of the people weren't having difficulty, and they would kind of lump what he's doing, because he's a medical doctor and anesthesiologist, they would lump it in with the idea of taking antidepressant or antipsychotic or anti-anxiety medications, what they call a psychotropic med. And instead, what they do is he gives people an injection that's probably an anesthetic in the bundle of nerves called the stellate ganglion, and they're blocking that activity. And it's related to all of the stuff, the limbic system, the fight or flight, et cetera. And it's like the theory behind it is that it's a way to kind of throw the switch off. If somebody's been in a trauma situation, they've got complex post-traumatic stress, et cetera, or they're one of the unlucky ones where they have one trauma and their system gets triggered to the on switch and it never goes off again. So they're in hypervigilance and they're in anxiety and they're in, a modified form of fight or flight all the time, which can give rise to the OCD type behavior and high anxiety, et cetera. And so this intervention is done by, like a board-certified anesthesiologist, and it's a one-shot or two-shot deal. It's not, you got to keep going back. It's not like you got to constantly take a medication. And some people find it highly effective. There was a gentleman that was a Vietnam veteran, and he lived in this area where I live, and he was part of whether it was Salvation Army or something, or the Veterans of Foreign Wars group. And I met him, and he talked about it, and his wife was there and talked about what a very difficult thing it was for him to be a Vietnam vet around this area, and every 4th of July, people are shooting off fireworks, and it's just re-traumatizing. Or any time this individual would hear a helicopter, he'd be diving under the couch or trying to find a way to, you know, get in a ditch because his post-traumatic stress symptoms were so intense. And he went and had the stellate ganglion block with Dr. Lipov, and he was good to go for a number of months. And then the symptoms started to come back, so he went and had another injection treatment, and he was good to go for years after that. Well, apparently they have been finding that for some people this is such a good solution because it doesn't require that people get involved in the therapy. It doesn't require that they take a whole series of pills all throughout the day and, you know, have complications of that, et cetera. And when it works, it frees people up to have the mental energy to do things like the reality management worksheet or therapy process, et cetera. So it isn't like it's an exclusive thing that counts out the benefit of therapy, or but it is a thing that frees people up to have a more kind of a calm, relaxed life.
Wow. Dr. Tim, I've got a question related to that. Because yesterday I remembered when you're talking, my son was saying, why do I feel so much better today? And I have a theory, he said. I've had, I forget what it was, something that made him take ibuprofen. And he said, I wonder if what's going on in my brain is an inflammation that's been eased by taking the ibuprofen, which sounds like a fix, like this stellate ganglion shot. I don't know whether stellate ganglion block is like an anti-inflammatory, or maybe it doesn't matter, but he was saying, maybe I need to take ibuprofen all the time, and I know that's not a good thing to do, and I'm not going to do it, but what's wrong with my brain? You know, he's talking like that.
It's something to look into. And I think of it, you know, frequently when people are just really stuck and they're so stuck that they can't even engage the journaling or the EFT tapping or the worksheet process.
Well, talk about trauma situation. The hospital situation for any doctor these days is hard. My son has always had a sensitivity to, you know, serious pressure and danger, and he feels responsible for the outcomes of his patients and brings them home in his mind and checks the stats on his computer in the middle of the night. And I think there's been a buildup of, like, being in a war zone. He talks about it that way. The hospital, he works in the emergency room a lot. He also does a lot of repairs of other operations that have gone bad. He's kind of the fix-it guy that gets called in to correct a bad surgery or a terrible bleed because something outside of the gynecological department that he's not in went over into the kidney department, and he had to go in and fix that. And he said, I just can't do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. But he's got all this aftermath. So when Annie Hopper talks about post-traumatic stress disorder, I think my son has this. And it's
As a matter of fact, my personal experience has been that the vast majority of people that are first responders or that work in emergency room systems have post-traumatic stress disorder. They don't just, it's just a matter of how well they deal with it, what their core personality is like, and how long their coping mechanisms hold up. It's not, you know, it really isn't possible for the average person to be exposed to that much human suffering and trauma and not be affected. But again, we're all affected in different ways. So some people get affected and they start shutting it down and denying and suppressing, and they, what a lot of people call, they get jaded. And they develop a dark sense of humor. And that's why you'll have, you know, police officers that they'll go out to, you know, a mass murder situation, and there even be kids involved. And before you know it, they're not even, they haven't left the scene, and they're joking about it, which, you know, it seems horrible, except it's a coping mechanism.
Right.
And if you stay emotionally connected, if you think in terms of that could be my son or daughter, you shut down with the intensity of the emotional response, and you can't function.
Right.
So, you know, it isn't that some people live in those situations and they're not affected. It's just that everybody's got their own individual ways of dealing with it that are developed in response to what are their core strengths. You know, like I was just talking, if you had a childhood like I had with parents that I had that matched my needs so well and the friends that I developed growing up, you can go through a lot more trauma without developing these disorder or disability type symptoms. It's not that you're not affected, it's just that you've got a stronger core and you can incorporate the tools more directly and quickly. But everybody is getting affected when they're exposed to trauma in one way or another. So Dr. Eugene Lipov, L-I-P-O-V, you can look him up. If you look up stellate ganglion block and his name in the Chicago area, you can learn all about it. I would be willing to bet there's somebody out in your area who is, you know, board certified, who does that kind of work. It's just, you know, or somewhere closer than Chicago, because it's not a brand new thing.
Interesting. It sounds as if that's something he could try to get him started toward being able to then use the tools or something like that later on, but he's way gone from anything like that. That's a great idea. I wonder.
Yeah, and the
go ahead.
The last time I was on a panel with Dr. Lipov, he actually had his teenage son come and give a testimonial, because he had the stellate ganglion block because he was suffering with so much anxiety and the inability to focus at school and, you know, mood swings and things like that. And he, you know, he got up and talked to the audience about how it really changed his life. It really turned his life around for him.
Wow, that's so amazing. Yeah, well, one of the problems with the Hopper program is that it takes a minimum of an hour a day of doing certain mental exercises. It takes a huge commitment. And of course, if my son doesn't go back to work, he could do that, although he's just not, you know, Tim Bingham is really, he gets up very early and he's walking in these papers in his study and he's talking to himself and singing himself little songs, and I think, my God, he's so into it, and he's feeling a difference because he's really doing it. My son's a different machine. I don't think he's going to go for that. So something like this to get a jump start, and I had forgotten what he said about the ibuprofen. I'm tempted to call my son up after the show and say, take another ibuprofen until we can figure something out. But anyway, it's been a pretty intense time. You hate to see your kids just miserable. Oh.
This is true. So there is that. There is, you know, some people find benefit with ketamine treatments. Now they've got nasal ketamine treatments. Some people find benefit with the transcranial magnetic stimulation. And they, people, you know, keep working to find different ways to help those who are suffering.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that we're just at the tip of the iceberg for what's going to end up helping people.
Hmm.
So, comments, questions, answers, testimonials from you or anybody else listening. We've got, we've got about 12 or 13 minutes left before the second hour begins. I thought you were going to raise a hand and comment on the Michael's taking off on the difference between his newfound difference between appreciation and gratitude, and your
no
talk about awe.
Well, that's just my way in. I can hook into that, and that may lead to gratitude or appreciation, as he would put it. But to start off with gratitude is like forcing something that doesn't come easily to me. And I've wondered about Annie Hopper's program, because she has people practice what sounds to me like affirmations. You'll have a negative thought and you'll say, oh, I see that thought and I know I'm having that thought and I accept and acknowledge that thought, but I'm going to choose the opposite. She calls the bad thoughts POPS, P-O-P-S, and I know it stands for something. So she goes for the opposite. Think of a good thought that's counter to that, and you do that. And I haven't been practicing that particularly much, but Tim is liking it. But to me, it sounds like affirmations, and I've never been terribly good at affirmations. It seems like glossing over something that's still there and still wrong.
Well, you know, what Michael does is use an affirmation as a tool to resonate the deeply held unconscious or subconscious material that you need
right.
to get rid of. That's what
right.
the mind
That's
shift
true.
Is.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And what the coherence therapy model would do is say, look, we've all got countless worldviews that conflict with each other. But the way we function in the world is we only let one of them be conscious at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And within whatever worldview surfaces for us that becomes conscious, we find a way to make all of the parts in that one worldview make sense. When you take a concept like an affirmation and you have the awareness that Michael Rice does about the unconscious material and the energetic resonance of it, you can use the affirmation to not just blindly try to override the unconscious material, but to resonate it into conscious awareness so it can be worked with more directly.
Yeah, I understand.
That's where this whole body of work has more depth to it than the work where someone just has affirmations.
Yeah.
And they're going to just power through the negativity by pouring on more positive.
Yeah.
There's a certain level of usefulness to that, which is why they've been around so long. Some people who don't have so much deep trauma or deeply held negative emotional beliefs about a set of issues, when they start practicing their affirmations, it just turns their ship around. They're in a little ski-doo or whatever, and they turn around on a dime, and they head in the right direction, and it's happy sailing. But for some people, they've got enough baggage to fill an aircraft carrier, and those things don't
right.
turn on a dime. And you've got to unload some of that baggage before you can actually turn the ship in the preferred direction and actually make some progress. So what I understand about the DNRS model is that she's not just using affirmations, she's using affirmations with visualization, with experiential shift, having people do visualizations and feel the energy inside of them. And, you know, as I looked into that program, it's pretty solid stuff. I mean, this is the stuff that coherence therapy uses. We don't just sit and do talk therapy and coherence therapy. We ask a person, what are you feeling when you say that? What are you feeling when you shift like that in your seat? Can you bring that feeling up and make it stronger? Is it associated with a memory? Can you go to that memory and remember who was there, how old you were, who else was there, and what was happening, where it was taking place? And then when the person lets all of that come up, it's like the thing that happens when you do a release, when we do the forgiveness pattern in the worksheet process I do with people. All that stuff comes up, and you get to see it with the conscious level awareness along with all of the baggage from the unconscious and subconscious level. And that's when, if you're holding this loving energy for yourself and others, that's when the transmutation happens. That's when the shift happens.
Yeah.
And it's not done at the conscious logical level.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
So I think there's more going on there in that program than just affirmations. And of course, many of us who've tried affirmations understand that while there's a certain level of utility to them, they aren't the answer for everyone. Because if they were, then the world would have been transformed, because people have been talking about the benefits of affirmations for decades. So that's what I say about that.
Or
it's what I have to say about it today. Come back tomorrow. I might have something different to say. You never know.
Yeah.
So I don't know how long it's been up, but someone did raise a hand. 828, is this Magda?
Hi, it is Magda, and I know there's just a minute. But I was just thinking that when I've dealt with the idea of affirmations or even doing the mind shift, or, you know, my reaction very often is, no, that's not true. And that can never be true about me, blah, blah, blah. You know, the whole thing goes through my mind. And what I have found that has been rather successful is to say, okay, I don't believe that right now. I can't possibly say it because I don't believe it's true. But what I do is just shift in a little bit of willingness. And so I might write instead, I am willing to see that this is possible for me at some time in the future. And that really makes a difference sometimes. It just like gets an ice pick into the big piece of ice that is sitting there, and then there is room for the sun to melt things and so forth. So I just wanted to interject and see if that makes any sense for you.
For me, Dr. Tim, or for Susan?
Either one or both.
Okay,
well,
Susan,
I love the
that makes sense to you?
Oh, yeah. The Mind Shifter is a very useful tool. And I always start out, well, that's bullshit, and I'm not going to do that, and I don't want to do that. And I go through the whole little kid stomping around, and then I put it down again. And as you say, the ice pick, that's a good thing. It starts getting through. No, I have no objection to the Mind Shifter at all. I think it's a great tool. It always shows up an awful lot of stuff very fast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if one was dealing with just affirmations and not in a Mind Shifter, would you think it would be helpful for that person to say, well, I don't believe it right now, but I'm willing to believe that it's possible?
Oh, yeah, sure. My son is just not doing that sort of. I've been calling and talking about my son and my grandson, both of whom, my grandson's more willing. But
mm-hmm.
my son, I think he needs the shot. The Eugene Lipov stellate ganglion block injection or something to jumpstart him back a little bit back toward where he feels like bothering about it. Now he's just...
Mm-hmm.
Totally under.
Okay. But there might be a time and place in the future.
Yeah.
When that will be useful.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, I know it's time to switch, so I'm going to get off and say bless you all and happy Easter if you celebrate that.
Well,
thanks.
Thank you, Magda. I'll just add that I often use that if I'm working with somebody in the EFT tapping, and the core of the EFT tapping says, in the original, was people hold the thing they're upset about, and they say, even though I have this upset, I deeply and completely love, accept, and forgive myself. And there are some people that they can't even bring themselves to say those words.
Oh, yeah.
Because it, you know, literally chokes in their throat and they don't believe it, et cetera. And so I have them say, okay, even though I have this upset, I'm willing to pretend it can get better even though I don't know how.
Very cool.
And
when I pair that set of phrases
with getting the mind, getting the body, the physiological body out of, you know, the parasympathetic, or into the parasympathetic and out of the sympathetic dominance, which is what the breath work does and the rhythmic tapping with the EFT does, and then I pair those two together, I'm literally training myself into a new response.
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, I'm holding the thoughts that have been paired with the upsetting response and the fight or flight response, I now train myself with operant conditioning to hold those thoughts and say those words and breathe in a relaxed way and initiate the parasympathetic response. And if I do that over time, I train the body and the mind differently. And there's tremendous benefit to that.
Indeed. Yeah. And opening doors, windows, whatever, it's starting.
Yeah, I think it's an absolute powerful tool. And again, not everybody likes it, so not everybody's willing to do it. But for those that like it, more power to them.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for the call and the comments. I will mute you both so you can listen in to the second hour. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. I'm turning on the microphone for and welcoming Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate it.
You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Have a good weekend. Happy Resurrection Weekend. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, March 29th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And give Michael a moment to dial in. And I'll just invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org. You can actually look. I now have, if you go under schedule, you'll see Women Healing Women. And I now have a flyer out there for the intensive in September, October. So if you're interested in that, please let me know. And I think Michael is expecting a couple of people to call in today, so I'll keep an eye out for their phone numbers. Excuse me. And Michael is with us now, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hey there, dear heart. Thank you. Delighted and welcome, everybody. Glad we get to step up to the plate one more time as we look into this ancient Aramaic physics, physiology, psychology, and genetics understanding that the Greeks turned into theology. So it's an awesome thing to separate those things out into the truth of what was going on, what was being spoken of, and to, in particular, understand the practical aspect of the tools. Literally from the point of physiology, from the point of physics, it all ties together. You know, people talk about metaphysics as though there's another world or something that's the metaphysical, but there's no such thing as a physical world. If we listen to Einstein on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. There's only physics. There isn't physics and meta, meaning beyond, something beyond physics. It's all just one energy system. When we separate it out, we create an artificial separation, and then we get to live in, as Einstein says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. And so we want to correct that and bring forward the tools for bringing our perceptual minds, our perceptual constructs into harmony with the actuality, the truth of what's going on. So it's an awesome and exciting project, and we're delighted you're here to be part of it. And Ms. Jean, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet on this end, but I do see a young lady on the switchboard that I think you were expecting a call from her.
So I can Jamuna?
Turn on, yes, so I'll turn on 808.
Hey, young lady.
Jamuna.
Hi. Hello.
Hey, welcome. How are you, young lady?
I'm pissed off.
Oh, really? You got an opportunity to learn forgiveness.
Yeah.
What's happening?
So.
What's your mind blaming it on?
Well, my mind's blaming it on that I have a racist neighbor that thinks they're better than me because they happen to have lived in the neighborhood for 50 years, and I'm just supposed to put up with their dog barking, even though I let them know how I feel. So, and I'm supposed to move, don't you know? You know, I've been here for a few years. I literally just got done this just a little while ago. I mean, we're on, well, it feels racist. I mean, I could be wrong, but it just feels like, and I, like every day, she goes to the gym, yeah? And she comes back, and at about 5:40 in the morning, the dog has to bark because she's coming home. And I said, you know, is there any way you can not have the dog bark at 5:40 in the morning? And I don't know. It just seems to me like she says, like, oh, well, the neighbors, you know, they understand there's noise and this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, well, you know, people at that time are, like, sleeping. They might wake up or they're meditating, you know. They don't want to have to have a daily thing with the dog. So, I mean, I was good, and then this happened. So this is a good forgiveness opportunity.
It is a powerful forgiveness opportunity. Here's my input.
Yeah.
Here's my input. You're not pissed off with your neighbor, and you've never been pissed off with anybody in your whole life. However, there's a part of you that holds this energy you call pissed off, and you could put it into your neighbor and the dog, or you could put it into your former or your future or somebody on the other side of the world. I mean, you can, your mind can put that into anything, and then the tendency will be to have a conversation about that thing into which you put that part of your own mind, or you can collapse that projection and start to confront that energy that you call pissed off that sounds like you're not enjoying very much. I mean, have you ever had that kind of energy moving in you before?
Oh, yes.
Well, you've got it again. You've got it again.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to be finished with it, you know, moving that energy out of your field, literally, I'm just going to talk about physics now, you know, every energy that we hold sets up a field. You know, if I throw a rock into a pond, I can see the waves move from the pond. I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science. This goes back about 40 years ago. And Global Science, they presented all kinds of, you know, high-level physics-type stuff. And one year we had a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. And that year, Marcel, and this guy, the kind of mind that Marcel had is when he was 11, he invented chemical light. He was a kid, and he's very science-oriented. And, you know, if you go to a football game and you buy a light stick, it's a plastic stick, and inside of it are some glass tubes. And when you bend it, the glass tubes break, the chemicals are released, they mix, and all of a sudden you've got a light. That was Marcel's invention at 11. Marcel's family didn't have the money to patent his invention. At 11, Marcel patented his invention. The reason you and I are talking right now is we have a thing called hard drives. Marcel invented the he worked for IBM. He invented the magnetic coating that allows hard drives to store information. The particular presentation that Marcel did was on a thing called a Delaware camera. Delaware camera is different than your average camera. Most cameras, you click the shutter, the aperture opens, light energy comes in, and the light energy is registered on the photographic plate, and you have a picture. But the Delaware camera has a tuning mechanism in front of the aperture. So if you tune the tuning mechanism to a particular frequency, if that frequency is there when you open the aperture, that's what's going to show up on the photographic plate. So what Marcel showed us was pictures that he took of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Very much like drop the wave or the rock in the water, you watch the wave. Everything that moves in your mind creates a high energy wave. And the purpose of life, when you recognize that it's through those high energy waves that we create, the purpose of life is to respond and to bring us energetic patterns that mimic or reflect or resonate with the rock we've dropped in the pond. So if I hold a pissed off part, I mean, in order for me to be aware of it, energy has to move in me. Anything that moves creates a wave. And what happens is, My take is that we're not designed to have pissed off energy in us. It's actually a toxic energy for physiology, and the purpose of life is to heal us. And so what I've noticed over the years, what I've come to understand, is life is relentless, that if we hold an energy that's destroying us, then life is going to send us through resonance somebody who's going to bring that up, or something, maybe even a dog, or what I consider to be a nasty neighbor. So the first order of business is I clean up that energy in me that produces that wave. Now, in many, many, many cases, the dog's going to stop barking. That whatever it is in the world, you know, we had a gentleman on, it was about 3 weeks ago. I don't know if you happen to be on that show. A gentleman from Mexico was on, and he was sharing a situation around a relationship with whom he had a daughter. And he's trying to arrange to see his daughter, and he's written to his former weeks ago, and she won't respond. We walked through a worksheet, and he just got some monumental shifts out of that worksheet. And I shared with him, and this was not a psychic prediction. It was just a result that I've seen over and over and over again. I said, I wouldn't be surprised if before the day is out, you get a response to your email. His now current spouse has been trained in this work and has done a lot of still point breathing work. And so once he did the worksheet, we closed the session out, and I suggested that she breathe him. Well, I don't know what was an hour and a half later or so, and I get a text. Guess what? I just finished breathing him. Guess what? His former wife responded to his email. Now, again, that wasn't any psychic prediction on my part. I just watch over and over and over again, and this is what the world calls a miracle, but it's not a miracle. It's physics. You know, we're creators, and you know, my take is that the most horrendous atrocity that's ever been done to us and that we've bought into is we've had in from us the fact that we are by nature creators. You and I are creative beings. And, of course, everybody loves that idea when the creation's rocking along and doing really well. But when it's not rocking along and doing really well, don't we know whose problem it is? And it's always them. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, virtually every one of us, by the fact that we were brought up in this insane Western culture, is by the age of four a card-carrying member of the one-world universal religion of blame. And the mind attaches whatever disturbance it has to whoever it is in its field of awareness that it can put that energy into and blame them for it. So I invite you to really dig out the worksheets, do some forgiveness, and let that go. You might see that change, or rather than see that change, you might find a way of speaking to this neighbor that invites or results in the neighbor's cooperation rather than the neighbor saying, oh, too bad, you know, it's just part of the game. Eh. Because that too is part of the creative process.
Can you explain? Like, you mean like me creating it, because I'm the creator, right?
Yeah, through resonance, like, I create everything that comes to me. I'm a part. It's like I'm not separate from what happens in my life.
Yeah.
And when I take that level of responsibility and I see, oh, here's the energy with which I'm creating this. You know, in essence, if I hold the disease of being pissed off somewhere in my tissue structure is literally in the process of aging, what the people call aging, and decaying. And so out of that energy that I hold within that tissue, an energy emanates. And the energy, I like to call it the creative wave or the high energy wave, and that's what Marcel Vogel was taking a picture of. And that creative wave says, hey, world, I've got this pissed off part with which I'm killing myself. Would anybody do me the favor of coming along and showing it to me directly so once again I can get an opportunity to become aware of what I've hidden from myself and heal it? And when I heal it, oftentimes they'll change. Not always, but oftentimes they'll change. And there's a wonderful, actually a two-pronged test in the Course in Miracles that you can apply to determine exactly where you are in terms of your process. The first part of the test, it's the easy part. The second part's a bear. The first part of the test is, when I think of anyone, I can put a check mark on that and say, yes, hey, that's huge progress. But then the second part of the test is, and I can't proclaim that I've passed this one fully yet, but the second part is, and when they think of me, do they share my perfect peace? That's the level of responsibility a creator has to take.
So how do you know what they think?
Well, it's none of my business, really. It's just a way of recognizing, if I got somebody raging at me, then there's a part of me engaged. There's a part of me involved. And I mean, gee, this person's raging and a danger. They're a danger. I need to protect myself. I need to take care of myself. And as I'm taking care of myself, and taking care of myself might mean picking up the phone, calling the police if somebody's going that bizarre, or it might look like moving out of the space. But as I move out of the space or pick up the phone, I want to do the work of cleaning up the part of me that draws it in so that I don't have to draw it in again, because here's how the universe works. It comes along and gives us a little tap on the shoulder. If we don't listen, if we don't change the energy, then it comes along and it gives us a little, you know, punch on the shoulder. And
yeah.
Then it moves and moves and moves until it's a cosmic, you know, it's the cosmic 2x4, whacks us upside the head. And if we don't listen to the 2x4, it becomes a 4x8. Sooner or later,
yeah.
The universe gets our attention, and we either destroy ourselves and die, or we clean it up and live.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When you realize that we live in a world of physics where literally we're all connected, I mean, literally we are, there is only one of us, the I, as Einstein offers, he says it's an optical delusion to think you're separate. You know, you're way over there in Hawaii and I'm way over here, and we go, well, we're obviously in totally separate spaces and, you know, nothing we could do could impact each other. But the truth is we are cells in one body, and our eye tricks us, perception tricks us into this idea that we're separate from each other and that we can't impact each other. But, you know, in terms of the text that we interacted with last week, and I offered the thought of extending love in your direction. And I mean literally,
yeah.
When I say that, I'm tapping in inside of me to the presence of me, of my energy of love, and consciously, purposely sending it in your direction. And we can literally make a difference in each other's lives by supporting each other that way. And,
yeah.
Of course, the opposite is true. When I extend the energy of anger or disgust or resentment or what have you, then I'm having a different impact. I get the original, a different impact on my own physiology and a different impact on the people around me. If you go to Yeshua, and you know, in the Aramaic language, the word law is not even related to what the Greek language presents as law. Our culture is totally oriented to the Greek ideas in many arenas, and the idea of law is the rule of a superior. Some superior, whether it's the court or the king, or made up a set of laws, or God, and if we don't obey, then there's going to be punishment. That word
yeah.
has no resemblance to that in Aramaic. In Aramaic, it's just, how does it work? So they ask this man, Yeshua, what's the first law? In essence, they're asking, in being a human being. Now, the Greeks tell us that he told us to love our neighbors as ourselves.
Yes. Yeah.
Not even close to what he said. Doesn't he? I mean, if Yeshua sat in a church and listened to a preacher say that, he'd say, that's all Greek to me. What he said is, and we'll give you the long form of it, in Aramaic, we would, you know, somebody who's listening with Aramaic brain cells would understand. He'd say, when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, you need to have rachma.
Yeah.
And by so doing, you will maintain your human life. So it wasn't love God, love neighbor as yourself, but it was maintain rachma for God, for neighbor, and by so doing, you maintain your own human life. And rachma, it turns out, is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that does two things. One, it's a gateway. When the gate is closed, that is, if hostility or fear is active, there is no human life active in that human form. We say, oh, there's a human being. If love isn't present and active in a human being, this is not a human being. It's a human form to be the active presence of love for there to be a human being in there. So he's saying, if you want to maintain your human life, then you have rachma for the Creator and neighbor. And by so doing, you keep the gate open where you actually live as and function as the active presence of love in your life.
Rachma means love in Aramaic, am I correct? Sorry about dropping my phone.
Well, we've got to be careful with that, because then if we go back to our Greek brain cells, we'll start saying silly things like, I love you.
Yeah.
And I don't love
you,
and I'll never love you, and I hope you never love me. And God doesn't love us, and we've never loved anyone, and nobody. But the whole culture, the whole Greek culture is going, I love you, I love you. Oh, I want you to love me. And it's all a fraud. Again, you know, the man who's probably responsible historically for more deaths on planet Earth than any human being ever is Vladimir Lenin. And he brilliantly observed, if you change a culture's word, meaning of a culture's words, you can destroy the culture.
Yeah,
love does not describe something we do to each other, something we get from each other, or something we give to each other. The word love describes the state of being we were each created in. And it is our responsibility to maintain that state awake, alive, alert in us. And hostility or fear obliterates it. So it's not about loving each other. And people go, well, you know, what's the difference? It's like, so what? You know, well, if you went to a doctor and they said, well, there's a problem with your circulation. It's in the epithelial cells or well, maybe it's in the, you know, the more the surface skin cells. It, you know, it's something like that. And I said, well, what are we going to do? Well, we'll treat the epithelium. Well, we'll treat the epithelium. Well, and I say, well, wait a minute. Which one are you going to do, doc? Well, they're pretty much the same. So, you know, does it really matter? Yeah, it matters a whole lot what you do. And I'm not going back to that doctor if he doesn't know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And if I don't understand, you know, Yeshua talks about the power of words because human mind is primarily operated by words. He says the power of life and death is in our words. We can engage in the frequencies of death with our words and literally kill ourselves. And that's what the culture's been doing for how long? How much hostility or fear runs the game? And so the work of Yeshua, which, you know, most people don't even want to think about or don't want to touch, is you need to take responsibility for what you're doing with your mind. And you need to learn to remove hostility and fear so that the true active presence of love lives in you. You're not going for the cheap copy of trying to get somebody to love you, which is really, for most people, is a venial form of approval. It really means I want you to approve of me. And someone who misuses the word love to describe something I'm going to get from you or give to you or do to you or you're going to do to me leaves the mind with an unachievable goal. You know, a lot of people live and you know, as they go through life, they come across this frustration. It's just like, why am I so frustrated? What's going on? Well, when you assign the mind a task that is impossible because you've misused a word, you just created a cycle of frustration that's going to take over and run your life. And if you're trying to love somebody and you're trying to get somebody to love you, the end result is that level of frustration because it's impossible. And the mind just keeps going, oh, I keep trying. If only they would, if only they would. I need to correct the way my mind uses words, so that I can get back on track. Oh, the objective isn't for me to love you. The objective is for me to function as my newborn essence, conscious, active, present love, and functioning from that, thinking from that, speaking from that, to actually function as a human being. Holy crap. You mean, Michael, I've got to go in and clean up every bit of hostility and fear and rage and guilt and drama and trauma from my physiology, from my generations in order to be free of it? Yeah, that's what I mean. That's the work of Yeshua.
Yeah.
There's an interesting passage I refer to it all the time. And there are a bunch of disciples that get together with Yeshua. And they, in essence, they say, hey, man, what do we need to do in order to please God? And Yeshua tells them, he tells them in the form of a parable, and literally half of the disciples that were there turn away and say, too hard a saying, who can understand that? And they leave, and they never come back. And they make up a so-called religion about Jesus who's going to save everybody. And they leave behind the work of Yeshua. And then you listen to Yeshua, and he talks to those people, and he says, why do you not do what I tell you to do? Many will come calling my name, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. And I won't have anything to do with them. You need to do what I said you need to do. There's a work to be done. And that faction who didn't want to do their work have made up a whole story. Well, there's nothing you can do anyway because you're just a hopeless, helpless sinner. And so many people are trapped in those words, in that insanity. So we're in this work, we're about restoring the original Aramaic understanding of those words and the tools, the how-to of Yeshua, to return to that space of really, truly living as human beings and hitting a critical mass where literally the whole world has an opportunity to wake up to the truth of who we are.
So, Doctor, you're saying that it's like the breath, to come from that conscious place within me, like the kingdom is within, like not getting into the words, but coming from the essence is what you're saying.
Exactly. That's the whole core of it. And when I'm not, I've got work to do. I've got work to do, and what my carbon-based memory mind, my perceptual mind will tend to do is to blame that work on somebody else. Blame that energy moving in me. Look what you did to me. You made me mad. You made me sad. You made me afraid. And then, you know, if you take the Greek solution, the Greeks will say, well, if they made you so mad, then all you'll have to do is forgive them. Just let them off the hook because you're mad. Mm. So what happened? So I let you off the hook because you resonated anger in me. Have I done anything to change my anger? No, my disease is still there, and it's going to carry on. Forgiveness is how I go inside myself and remove what never belonged. The Greeks substituted pardoning for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's nice, you know, if you did something like your neighbor, it doesn't sound like they're very considerate. So if you chose to say, I'm going to pardon you. Okay, I'm going to let you off the hook for that. That's really pretty nasty, but okay, I'll extend love in your direction, and I'll let you off the hook. And now I realize that all this pissed off energy in me that comes up when your dog barks at 5:30 in the morning, it's about me, and so I'm going to breathe. I'm going to go inside myself. I'm going to apply forgiveness and remove that energy. And guess what? You're laying in bed and you're sound asleep at 5:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden you become aware of this dog barking, and because you're a creator, you recognize, oh, there's an energy called barking dog. I can transmute and breathe into that energy, and actually, I can set my mind so that when it's 5:30 in the morning I hear a barking dog, it puts me into a deeper level of sleep. And now the barking dog puts me to sleep. Because I'm a creator, and I create with whatever energy comes to me. So I get deeper sleep because the dog barks, because that's how I've chosen to create my life. Does that make sense?
No and yes.
Yeah, of course,
yes,
the non-being, my wife say, no, don't tell me that crap.
What I'm trying to get to
in our heart of hearts, we know it's true.
How do I practice that? I just become, join with the dog, in my heart?
Well, that would be one way of doing it, is to extend the presence of love. Actually, we were doing an intensive in a kind of a backwoods area in Florida. This was back probably 12, 14 years ago. And there was a gentleman there who was a runner, and he'd go out and run every morning. And he shared with us that he had gone on his run, and he'd gone down a street. He hadn't, he'd been there for several days. And this one day, he went down this street, and all of a sudden there's a, I don't even remember what kind of a dog, but one of the ones that's known to be pretty vicious. And he said, this dog is just tearing at me with his teeth going like he's going to tear me to shreds. And he said, we had just done in the intensive the love exchange. And he said, I knew I couldn't outrun this dog, so I just took a breath. And I did a love exchange with the dog. And he said, the dog just instantly quieted down. And he's like, wow. And then he kind of got into a little bit of fear mode again. The dog started baring his teeth and coming after him again. And once again, he was able to center himself in love, connect, and the dog, he just walked away from the dog, and the dog did no more, nothing.
So how do you exactly do this love exchange? I mean, I know you talk about that. I think my mind's not allowing me to actually get it.
Let's do it. Let's do one. This is one of the tools we teach in our intensives. So what I'm going to ask everybody to do, and if we would, you know, I don't know where people are. We may have London, England. We may have Sweden on. We may have Poland on the show. I don't know. But wherever you are in the world, I'm going to ask everyone to just join us in doing this exercise. So I'm going to start by closing my eyes. I'll invite you to do that. And you close your eyes so that the mind can be more focused, get rid of the visual distractions. It gives you more energy to dedicate to directing your own mind. And we're going to invite everyone to tap into the deepest, clearest love that you can. Now, one of the places I suggest people go is the moment when they first held a newborn. If you don't have a newborn experience to go to, it might be your kitten. I know that on occasions I've loaned people what I go to. I've loaned them my story. 43 years ago, my daughter was in the process of being born. We purposely set it up so that we birthed our kids at home. And I was catching her as she came out of my wife's womb. Her head landed in my hands. She opened her eyes and looked at me. Now, they tell us that a newborn can't focus her eyes for several days. That's not true. At least it wasn't for my daughter, because my daughter laser focused into my eyes and she grinned at me. And she literally sent me into a state of love and connectedness that I didn't know was even possible till that point. Into that energy in you. That's who you are. And let yourself focus there as you breathe. And then think about this audience that is all over the globe right now, or think about a person in particular. Maybe there's someone you've got a challenge with. Maybe your neighbor. In this case, it might be useful to do it with your neighbor and with her dog. So as you really tap into and breathe into that space of connectedness, imagine that you open your eyes and there's your neighbor with her dog beside her. And you actually literally extend that presence of love in you to your neighbor. You extend your essential nature outside of your form into the space of that neighbor. And as I'm doing this exercise, and notice if there are any places, and I'm saying this because I just noticed it, that there was a little bit of tightness just kind of above my nose, behind my forehead, that I wasn't aware of till I kind of settled into this place. So the first place I'm going to go is I'm going to focus on softening that space just behind my forehead, above my nose, and extending that energy all the way to Hawaii, to you. And all the way to Poland, where probably Sandy's on, because she usually is. And I'm going to extend that energy to England, where Yinka is likely on the show today. And to Peter in Sweden. And Susan up there in the Northeast. Chuck and Maga in Missouri. And Jeannie and Aria Rain in the room in front of me. And if Sarah's on the phone, we just finished doing 3-day intensive. She was planning to listen, so she's driving. Sarah, extending that love in your direction, that energy. And for me, what happens as I do that right now, it's almost visual for me right now that as I've done that, and actually this is the first time I've had this experience when I've done this exercise, but it's almost like my visual field has expanded in all those directions that I just imagined that variety of people was. It's kind of strange. It's a new experience for me. I've done this experience, this exercise many, many times. But it's almost like my visual field, my eyes are closed, but my visual field's expanded. And what's happening for you?
Well, I actually am seeing my neighbor and her dog in front of me, literally. I'm just feeling into the energy of seeing what you talked about your daughter. What did they mean? And seeing the eyes of that newborn, like, and seeing it in them, like, seeing that same kind of essence that I see in that baby. Like, I'm just visualizing a newborn baby. It might not be the way your daughter looks, but I'm seeing a newborn baby and seeing the eyes just look up at me. And just seeing those eyes in them, even the dog, because the love essence is there with the dog. And I can feel a shift in me. And, you know, I almost have this kind of melting away and this feeling of like, I'm sorry. But not from a place that I did anything wrong, but like seeing how the energy in me used them to just to piss off.
Sweet. Can you imagine? You know, you listen to Yeshua, the physicist, and he says, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. Can you imagine the day when enough humans do exactly what you just did, that together we create critical mass? That's what Yeshua was talking about. He wasn't talking about a loaf of bread, a little leavening. That's the just the little bit of shift that's needed in order for the whole of something to change. Imagine the morning that the energy you just touched into and brought into the world on a new level, that enough people are doing that, that that energy connects and literally creates an energy field that makes that shift for every mind, heart, and being on the planet. That's what Yeshua was talking about, critical mass.
I think that eventually, like, the work you're doing, Doc, and or Doctor, and what Yeshua came to start the momentum of is exactly what you just spoke about.
It's what we're here to do.
Yeah. It's bound to happen.
And I, in particular, am so deeply appreciative of the fact that Yeshua had the brain cells to understand and explain to us how to access our own unconscious dynamics through forgiveness and remove those unconscious dynamics, which is what you just did. And it's by bringing the active presence of love to the trauma energy. Love is to trauma what sun is to a puddle of water. It evaporates it, literally. It is an energetic transmutation that takes place. And, you know, this goes back better than 30 years ago at Heartland, and I can remember I'm teaching this and I'm working to understand on deeper and deeper levels. And we had an intensive and there were probably about 50 people in the room. And there was one person who was in a particularly traumatized way. And You know, at this point, I don't even remember what the tools were we using. I don't remember what the details of it were, but but I can remember that they made this the same. Like I could hear the shift in your voice, and in this intensive, this person went from like an extreme state of trauma. It wasn't just a story about a dog. It was like some extreme dis-ease type trauma into that connected space of love. And, you know, there were about 50 other people in the room, and they're the only one that made that shift. And I'm going, what is the deal here? What is it that's at the root of healing? And the reply that I got, and I, for the first time in my life, I understood what it takes to heal. And that is that that trauma energy that we've been hiding from ourselves, that's in the unconscious, has to surface. Now, of course, that happens all the time. 5:30 in the morning, the dog barks and it happens. But what makes it a healing moment is that love is conscious, active, and present in me at the moment when the dog barks and my pissed off part comes up. When what's hiding in the unconscious peeks its head up in the presence of active love is dissolved instantly. And that's the core of healing, and that's how forgiveness works. And that's the kind of breath that releases the next level of the energy. That's it exactly. That's Rukka Dukkha in action. What you just did with your breath spontaneously there, that's Rukka in action that we talk about. Rukka Dukkha. Yeah. The feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors. And don't be surprised if you start getting some new insights into truth, because the other part, when we really tap into and allow that energy of breath to move in us, this is, in Aramaic, literally a feminine elemental force in us that, one, undoes the effects of our errors, and two, teaches us the truth. Don't be surprised if you start getting some new insights into your world, your life, what's going on for you. Because when Rukka becomes active, that's what happens. And that breath is exactly how she becomes active.
Yeah.
That's what was spoken of in the creation story when it said, it didn't say God sent out his spirit. It was God sent out Rukka, his breath.
Beautiful. I can feel that. For sure.
Got it. I'm feeling it with you. And that's what the still point process is all about, is reaching the place where the breath is moving to the point where it starts to move in me without my effort. There's a whole passage in the Course in Miracles that speaks of that, of Rukka moving in you. And here's what it says. Without your effort, she will go before you, making straight your path and leaving in your way no stones to trip on, no obstacles to bar your way. Nothing you need will be denied you. Not one seeming difficulty, but will melt away before you reach it. You need take thought for nothing, careless of everything, except the one purpose that you would fulfill. And that purpose is guaranteed because it rests on you, a daughter of God.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you brought that up, Dr. Rice, because I actually was just talking about that passage the other day with another Course in Miracles person, and that was, I don't know why, but it's perfect that it came here, like you spoke it again. No coincidence.
No coincidence, that's for sure. Yeah, and I mean, and I've read that passage and I've repeated that passage 1,000 times, and thank you for what you're moving and what you brought up, because for me it energetically went through me on a whole new level, like my whole structure went into goosebumps as I was speaking, and like the whole new level for me. So thank you for that.
No worries. I felt like to be honest and to bring it up, because why hide it? There's no hiding.
Paul had that one right. He said nothing will remain hidden. Everything will be made known in the light of day. And the way it's going to be made known is it may show up as a barking dog.
Yep.
Or you know, a thousand different events.
Yeah.
And when I'm willing to take responsibility for what's moving in me, then in the presence of active love and breath, I can transmute that energy and be freed of it. It will be undone. It will be removed, evaporated from me. So breathing with you. Jeannie says sometimes on the show that when something starts resonating in me, and I'll take a deeper breath. She says I sound like Darth Vader.
Aw. Thank you, Dr. Ray.
Absolutely delighted. And it's Michael, by the way, please.
Okay, I'll call you Michael. Okay.
Yeah, please do.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, actually, call me anything but late for dinner, but Michael's good.
But we won't call you late for dinner.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I hope others got the gift as well. I'm sure they did.
I suspect this has been a gift for everybody. Sure has been for me, and I suspect everybody's listening to get a gift out of it. So, nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Any other thoughts for you today?
Any more thoughts? It's just I have this worksheet printed out. I see them right now, so I'm definitely going to take a look at them again and do it.
Cool. And, you know, it took me about 35 years of teaching the core of first century Aramaic forgiveness before I understood why would I do such a silly-ass thing as cancel a perfectly good, loving, wonderful goal. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. At least it didn't before I understood how the human mind worked. But now, and I mean literally, it took me 35 years of working with it full time to understand why and how it worked. And just to put it in a short and sweet term, in step one, you're describing a perceptual construct of your mind. And you remember in the Course in Miracles, on the lesson, What is the World?, says the world is false perception. It is born of error. It has not left its source. It will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. The world or perception is a world made up by us in order to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So when the Course is talking about forgiveness in the world, it's talking about collapsing perception, the constructs of the mind, the things that come from carbon-based memory, the body's mind, the generational patterns. And put that together with the Harvard research. Back in the 50s, psychologists did research at Harvard, and what they came up with was, you know, they're hooking people's brains up to electrodes and they're measuring brain cell firings. And in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells were firing, that's about a 25th of a second, what they determined was the max amount of data that went into conscious awareness, the max amount of data that was used to build our perception of the dog and the neighbor or whatever, in that time frame was 9 bits. Tiny, tiny little bit of information compared to everything that's moving and firing in us. So perception is this 9-bit mind and its construct that tells us what's supposedly true.
Yeah.
And if you recognize that that's a false world made up by you, what do you have to do? You have to get that thing out of the way. How do you do it? Well, you've got to understand what drives it. This is the piece that I finally got after 35 years of working with it and going, Oh, now I know why I'd cancel a perfectly good goal, because every time I load it in my mind, it drives my mind to use some form of hostility or fear to create the world that I see, to create my perception. The goal is a driver for the construct of my mind. I want to collapse that sucker because I'm using that to void what is actually in the creation for me. So I cancel the goal, not because I don't want it, not because it's anything wrong with the goal, but I recognize that every time I load it in my mind uses some kind of hostility or fear to produce the world that I see, or I think I see, the world that's painted on the inside of my eyeballs. So when I cancel that world, when I shebag in Aramaic that goal, that world collapses. And when it collapses, just like when the 9/11 towers went down, they dropped into their own footprint. When I cancel the goal, the perceptual construct of my mind drops into its own footprint, and now I've got access, direct access, to that which is in my unconscious that needs to be healed.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. It's genius. So, you know, thank you, Yeshua, for having the brain cells to bring that to the world. And, you know, it's sad that the Greeks turned it backward and turned it into parting, but I'm sure glad it was there. And I, for one, personally, just in terms of my own personal process, feel so just deeply, deeply grateful for the fact that, wow, somebody actually understood that and handed it to us. It's pretty awesome.
He was the way shower. He is the way shower.
Yep, absolutely. And you go to that passage in the Course that defines forgiveness precisely the same as it's defined in the Aramaic. Although I never saw it in the Course until I had the brain cells to see it from the Aramaic. And I've never found anybody working with the Course that can tell me how to forgive. I've never found anybody in 50 years, almost 50 years of working with the Course, 45 maybe. I've never found anybody that can tell me how it works. But when you go, it's right there in back, I think it's lesson 336, eighth paragraph. Mm. It's there, just so simple. Here it is. Let go all the things you think you want. Your trifling treasure, your goal, put away and leave a clean and open space within your mind for Christ to come. There it is. There's forgiveness right there. Exactly as it is in the Aramaic. It's got nothing to do with me letting anybody else. I don't forgive my brother. I don't forgive myself. I don't forgive God. I don't forgive Hitler. I don't forgive, none of that. I look at the goal that's driving my perception. Step one, I lay out the perceptual construct of my mind. Step two, I go into willingness. Yeah, I'm willing to go through this. Whatever's at the root of this pain, I'm willing to embrace it and allow it to come forward for healing. Identify the goal that's driving that perception, which I outlined in step one. Step four, I connect to that conscious, active, present love. I go back and hold my daughter's head again.
Yeah.
And then I cancel the goal. Perception collapses. I ask the breath, I ask Rukutukutcha to move in me, because, I mean, if this is something that's been going on in my bloodline for 100 generations, how with a 9-bit mind am I ever going to figure it out or move through it? Just not going to happen. But when I ask Ruka, hey, I'm going to turn this over. I don't know what to do with this. Will you take it? And I invite her to move, then the movement starts. And that's forgiveness.
Jai. Yeah.
This Aloha.
This is amazing.
Same as the
it.
Word rachma in Aramaic.
Yes.
Aloha, Aramaic. I think the Hawaiians are one of the lost tribes.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah.
They're amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, for
Thank
sure.
Thank you so much, Michael.
All right, dear heart, you have a blessed one. Appreciate you.
Love you, Gene. Well,
opened a great conversation.
But
say again?
Sending my love to you. I was like, do I love Jeannie? I was about to say, I love you, Jeannie, but
I'm going to say I'm holding space and love for Jeannie and Michael and everyone.
Thank you.
You're
received
welcome.
And returned. And think of everybody in between us and you who gets touched with that energy as it moves.
Yes. Thank you.
Joining you in that. All right. Blessings. Happy Resurrection Day. You just did Easter right there in that love exchange. Awesome. All right, Miss Jeannie, we're down to about 6 minutes, I think. 5 minutes, maybe.
You have 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Well, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in China? Or anything for you to add to that conversation? That
no,
went to
some
awesome. Places I wasn't expecting it to go, but it was pretty sweet. We'll have to make this one of the special shows.
We actually taught the love exchange in Aria's classroom. And I've put in the notes for today, not just the link to a poster that we have on the love exchange, but there's also several videos about that different people have done on eye gazing. Amnesty International did an experiment on it, eye contact. So there's several links in the notes for today that people can check out as well.
Awesome. And actually, let's share the story about this was probably 19 or maybe 2020, let's see, 2003, we were doing an intensive at Heartland. And, I mean, this love exchange is something I've taught from the beginning of this work. And there was a young lady there, if I remember correctly, she was probably about 9. Am I remembering correctly, Jeannie?
She was 11. She was 11.
Was she 11? So we're doing the love exchange, and she came up with the idea of she's doing it, and she was guided to put her hand on the heart of the person she was doing the love exchange with. They're doing this eye to eye. And took their hand and put their hand on her heart. And so she added a whole other level of love exchange when this child of 11 just intuitively said, you know, put her hand out on the person she was doing the love exchange with and asked them to put their hand on her heart. So I hold my hand on my heart. And I extend my heart to your heart in opening this space of critical mass where 7.5 billion people wake up with their hands on their hearts, knowing themselves as love, and choosing to extend that love to every family member, every friend, every enemy, to every other person on the planet. It'll be really cool to be alive as that happens and we hit critical mass and the whole world starts to function as humans. Pretty awesome. So thank you for sharing this space with us, breathing with you, opening my heart to embrace you in my love, and opening my being to receive your embrace. And breathing with you. Thank you for joining us. Blessings. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.
AGAIN.org.